greet you this morning in Jesus' name. I'd like to turn to the book of Matthew, verse 24. Start reading Matthew 24, starting verse 1. Jesus came out from the temple and was going away when his disciples came up to point out the temple buildings to him. And he said to them, "Do you not see all these things? Truly I say to you, not one stone here will be left upon another which will not be torn down." As he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, "Tell us, when will these things happen, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" And Jesus answered and said to them, "See to it that no one misleads you, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will mislead many. You will be hearing of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not frightened, for those things must take place, but that is not yet the end. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and in various places there will be famines and earthquakes, but all these things are merely the beginning of birth pains. Then they will deliver you to tribulation and will kill you, and you will be hated by all nations because of my name. At that time, many will fall away and will betray one another and hate one another. Many false prophets will arise and will mislead many. Because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end, he will be saved. This gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come." Stop there. There's a lot in what I've read in these first 14 verses. One thing that struck my attention was in verse 5, "Many will come in my name saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will mislead many." That seems like it doesn't cease from happening. There's many coming in the name of Christ, or even a few saying they are Christ, and misleading many. And, you know, if you're going to claim Christianity, what we're going to talk about this morning is the foundation stone of Christianity. Let's go on to tells about the things that will come to pass. And at that time, many will fall away, in verse 10, and will betray one another and hate one another. Many false prophets will arise and will mislead many. Verse 12, because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold. And I thought about that story that I read in children's class about the fire and the coals going out, and how important that was to them, and how today it's not that important to us. We can just strike up a fire at any time. But 200 years ago or so, they had to keep coals burning day and night, year round, or they were in trouble. They had to start a fire some way, because that's how they lived, how they cooked and how they kept warm in the winter. So it was physically important that you had to have a fire to live. And in this verse, it says that because lawlessness is increased, and that's what we're seeing today, is a real epidemic of lawlessness. More than ever, more than I've ever known it or heard it or seen it, except for given times in history, but as far as a general worldwide thing in the time since the flood. There is a real lawlessness abounding, and many people's love is growing cold because of that. In other words, they're not really as apt to help people because their help is ineffective. The help that they can give to the help that we can give to people is so often just to get them to the next fix, just to get them to the next whatever they're doing. It's not getting them to a place where they can help themselves too often. And so we tend to think that, what's the use? Why? Why do this? It's why give them things that they ask for? Why help them? Why? I mean, they're just going to turn it around and use it again to the evil, or to self-destruct, or to continue in a wicked lifestyle. And you know, the question and the scenarios go on and on. But so our love begins to wax cold. King James says, grow cold. That's what wax means, grow, and becomes cold. And we just turn a cold shoulder and turn our face away. You know, when you think about the story of the Good Samaritan, the priest and the Levite were, you know, they were law-abiding citizens. They were pretty good people. And they, you know, it may have been that earlier in their life they would have helped this poor man. But by the time they were where they were in their life, they were probably getting pretty tired of it. And just, he's just a Samaritan anyway. Or we could put in there, he's just a druggie, you know, or he's just a whatever. You could put anything in that slot on that line there, and do the same thing that the priest and the Levite did to the man that fell among thieves, and grow as cold as they are. But Jesus praised the deeds of the Samaritan man, who still had a heart. He still had a heart to love people, no matter whose fault it was, no matter if he was, maybe the man wasn't very prudent by passing through there with riches or with any kind of wealth that he had, or whatever he had. It was in most people's eyes, a foolish mistake, a foolish move, and he had it coming by coming through there at that time of night or day, whenever it was, knowing that it's a place for robbers to hang out. And there's all kinds of ways you can justify not helping someone, but the simple fact remains, as Jesus said, because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold. But, verse 13, the one who endures to the end will be saved. And that's a direct link to the verse before it. So it's not enough just to have a cold love and to think, as long as everything else is in place, we're going to make it. Because if our love is cold, we're not going to make it, whether we've got everything else right or not. If our love is not warm and not fanned into flame at times, and at least kept embers burning, then we're not going to endure to the end. Because right here he's saying that those whose love endures to the end in an effective way toward your fellow man, unless that happens, you won't be saved. And then directly the next verse, this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come. But most people won't have it, it said. Most people's love will grow cold. There's probably more religion in the world today and more Christianity in the world today than there ever has been. And but there's less of this kind of love in proportion to the amount of professing Christians that there are. If that weren't the case, then Christians wouldn't be divorcing their husbands and their wives. Christians wouldn't be suing people at law. Christians wouldn't be trying to protect themselves and their goods to the extent that they are. Christians wouldn't be concerned with self-defense and litigation at law. Christians wouldn't be self-preservationists with piling up physical gold instead of just money. Christians wouldn't be worried about those things because they're living in fear, calling themselves Christians. And that's not what it means to be a Christian. But at the very foundation of Christianity is love for God and love for your neighbor, whether your neighbor is a Christian or not. And love, without it, you know, we can write down our statements of faith. We can sharpen our pencil and write till it's dull about how we should act toward one another, how we should act and relate to the world around us, and get all that finely tuned and defined in our theology, while someone without such a defined theology is out loving others and loving God and loving their fellow man. What's going to stand more in judgment than actually loving and giving yourself for your fellow man? Giving your time, your whatever you are, giving yourself to someone who can't give it back, and to those who can. But especially to those who can't. And I appreciate you, brethren and sisters, that are doing that in a real way, physical way, on a daily basis. That's a real blessing. God bless you for that. And I feel like I'm preaching to myself more than you all, because it's hard for me sometimes to just not try to think of the reasons that I shouldn't help someone, and think of being like God, who is good to all, no matter what their place or station in life is. You know, we think about Matthew 18. What's the first thing that comes to your mind when somebody says Matthew 18? Wilbur, you tell me what you think. Going to a brother when there's a sin or problem. I mean, that's what I think. But let's turn to Matthew 18. It's too bad that Matthew 18 has only that to define it in our minds. And we've heard a lot of that in the last several years, especially the last year. But let's read some of the rest of Matthew 18. Verse 3, truly I say to you, unless you are converted and become like children, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. Now think about a child. Think about the children of those people who have left our fellowship and slanderously use our names. Think about their children. Have you ever been in a place where their children, I mean small enough children, I mean young children, and your children were together, and how it didn't matter anymore? How they just were buddies again? They didn't even know what was going on with moms and dads and their children. They loved one another anyway. But because mommy and daddy didn't agree with your mommy and daddy, I can't see you anymore. And unless we become like children, you'll not enter the kingdom of heaven. We need, and you can see that in children, we need a heart like that. Children that get in a fuss over some little toy, and they cry a little about it and get spanked maybe, and the next few minutes they're back at playing together again. That's just such a blessing. We need to be able to, though we recognize a sin, We need to be able to forgive like that and accept back and to love again. Because that's the way our Father does. Whoever then humbles himself as this child, he is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever receives one such child in my name receives me. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it would be better for him to have a heavy millstone hung around his neck and to be drowned in the depth of the sea. This has a lot of depth in it, a lot of meaning, but what we're looking at right now is having a heart of love for our fellow man and those who have wronged us, those who have treated us wrongly, to quickly forgive and hope the best for them. Woe to the world because of its stumbling blocks, for it is inevitable that stumbling blocks come, but woe to that man through whom the stumbling block comes. If your hand or your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it from you. It is better for you to enter life crippled or lame than to have two hands or two feet and be cast into the eternal fire. If your eye causes you to stumble, pluck it out and throw it from you. It is better for you to enter life with one eye than to have two eyes and be cast into the fiery hell. See that you do not despise one of these little ones, for I say to you that their angels in heaven continually see the face of my Father who is in heaven. For the Son of Man has come to save that which was lost. Verse 12. What do you think? If any man has 100 sheep, and one of them has gone astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountains and go and search for the one that is straying? If it turns out that he finds it, truly I say to you, he rejoices over it more than over the 99 which have not gone astray. So it is not the will of your Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones perish. And then it talks about if your brother sins and how to do that. What is the worth of a soul? Jesus said, what would a man give in exchange for his soul? That means, what price are you placing on your soul? How important is your soul to you? And how important is your brother's soul to you? Sometimes we get pretty cold. We get pretty indifferent to others around us. I do. And you hear of so many people dying or so many tragedies and just soul after soul after soul entering eternity. And it just becomes commonplace. You just kind of think, well, we're just here for a while and we die. But these are souls. These are people that are just as important to God as you are and I am. And no matter what, I mean, I've thought of, just your friends and your relatives, those daily faces that you see, those you see every week or those you see every month, maybe just once a month or so, maybe see the mailman every day sometime. I mean, often he's there every day, basically, and you can see him. And then maybe the UPS man or FedEx man you just see every 2 weeks or so. Unless you're Marcus, you might see him pretty often then. And then you see somebody else every month or every couple of times a year. Relatives you might see once or twice a year. And then a lot of people you see and you'll never see them again. Those faces that you meet have a soul behind them and they're important to God. Sometimes we like to imagine ourselves away from people. You know, somewhere lost in the Mark Twain National Forest, just setting up on a hill all by ourselves and get away from people. Or maybe somewhere down the South Pacific on a uninhabited island, just sitting there watching the waves come in and go out. That would be real nice for about an hour. And then I'd be hoping to get out of there. But some of you aren't built like me, and you probably enjoy it a lot longer, and that's fine. We all need a little bit of a time away. Jesus needed it. He needed time to come apart, and he did that, and even then they tried to find him, I believe. So there's nothing wrong with having quiet time and getting alone, but we're in a world of people. God didn't light a fire. He said, you're a city set on a hill, and it cannot be hid. He doesn't spark a fire and then put it out in the wilderness. He wants it among people so that the people can feel the warmth of it and see the light of it. And that's the purpose of the church in this world. And that's why I think it's good to be near a town as a church and just to be there. I've never appreciated the idea of starting a church, getting a few people together that all agree, and then go off somewhere in the mountains of Montana or deep in Kentucky somewhere or wherever and get away from everybody so we can do our own thing. Well, you're already missing it. I mean, you might do your own thing, and it might be pretty defined and refined, and you have everything right down to the last jot and tittle, but you're missing it. That's not what your calling is if you're a Christian. We're to be among people. But what about those people that been through relationship and relationship and relationship, and from one bad one to a worse one, been married 3 or 4 times, children in and out of wedlock, living on the state, and drugs and alcohol abuse, and just has a wretched existence. We often think of people, or I do, I think of, you know, hardworking Americans that got the mom, the dad, the thing going on, just regular American life, and going to public school and going to ball games and voting for the best Republican that they can think of. And, you know, just that's. But what about the people who have made bad choices? Because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall grow cold. Well, they did it to themselves. Do you remember the time when you were faced with a decision and you were tempted to go the wrong way and you were one decision away from the same life? That they had and that they have. What if you've gone ahead, made that wrong decision like they did? You got into that car and what if that one decision you made to stay married, you'd made the other decision because in your anger, your frustration, you drove away, took the kids and walked off or left? Very likely you could be in a similar situation as any of them. Maybe not so bad as that, but with some other mate in another situation? What makes you and I any different than them? Paul said, were it not for the grace of God. He said, because of the grace of God, I am what I am. John Wesley said, were it not for the grace of God, there go I. We need to remember what we've been saved from. Some of us have gone to certain depths of sin and been saved from them. And now we're trying to raise our children to not do that and to make right decisions and give them a good environment to grow up in, so that the people around them can encourage them in the right direction and not make a foolish and stupid decision to take that first wrong turn and go away from the path that leads to eternal life. But each of us make our own decision at that crucial point. And sometimes we get opportunity after opportunity to make that decision. Sometimes we're not just tempted once and then we're good after that. Most times we're not. But most of us probably have one time that we can remember that was the hardest to make the right decision. Sometimes those are just as hard time after time. But finally, once we continually make that right decision, and if we don't, well, it gets easier, but, and then if we don't, though, we can come back. God grants that sometimes. But these are people that were born into this world just like you and I. Clean slate. Some of them had everything against them when they hit the ground. Everything. They didn't even have an opportunity to ever hear anything wholesome or good. There's many people like that in this country. They know very little of anything to do with God except slanderously against Him from their parents and those around them. TV raises them, and the public school feeds them. That's a dire situation. We need to remember that were it not for the grace of God, we'd be there too. God's grace was given to us, and I marvel at that. I don't know why that I wanted to do something different, but I'm glad I did. And I know that I know it's because of God's grace, but I also know I had a decision to make in that. But why did I even care? You can't make people's decisions for them. You can't. While God has called us to care for them, you can't care for them. They have to care themselves. But you can care for them. You can't. It has to matter to them before they make a decision to do something, change in their life. Do a change in their life. But until they do, or while they're doing that, we can choose to extend ourselves and to love them as God loved us. And that's worth more than anything else you can tell them. Anything else you can write down, anything you can put in a book, anything you can sing in a song, anything. What value is there to read this book and be able to tell somebody what it says? Anybody can read a book and tell somebody what it says. And that's what Christianity has become today. A bunch of people that know how to read and then tell somebody else what they think it means. That's next to worthless to God. He'd rather have a bunch of illiterates that know how to love than a bunch of people who are literate that don't. By far. Am I saying not read the Bible? Well, maybe you don't need to read it for a while. Just do what you already know. And then read some more. Paul said, or the apostles at Jerusalem said, only we would that you would remember the poor. Well, who are the poor? Did he mean someone who lives on a very low income but is doing it very well? That takes care of business, he's prompt with his payments, he feeds his family, he's clothed well enough. I mean, he's taking care of business. Are we supposed to go and aid that person just because they would be classed as poor in the society they live in? They're doing fine. I mean, all of us probably here today would be classed as poor by even most Americans. Or nearly there, anyway. The poor, when you think about the class of people that we would think of as poor, what usually attaches itself to those ideas? We usually think, well, there's all the poor. Why are the poor without? It's because for some reason or other they've made a bad decision that's led them to a path that they're in want. And often it's accompanied by a lot of self-abuse, self-destructive habits and on and on. Remember the poor. Not just poor in money, but poor. Think about that vessel that girl in that story was carrying coals of fire in. That's what you and I are. We're little pots that's carrying fire to a world that's in need of it. If you don't tend your fire, it'll go out. And the way you tend your fire is use it to warm somebody. Use it to light somebody's path. It's not by packing your head full of knowledge of the Bible. I think judgment's going to reveal some pretty striking things. And remember, tending your fire is a matter of life and death. Not only for yourself, but for those around you. Paul told Timothy that you can both save yourself and them that hear you. And just think, when you are faced with a situation like that, what if this were me? And how easily it could have been you. Would I be glad for someone to come along and offer a hand? Or just a smile? Or just a little bit of help? Just a kind word? Or just a wave or a toot of the horn sometimes? Just be light. Light is, after a rainy time like this and sun hadn't been shining for a day or two or three, you get to thinking, well, it'd be nice to see the sun. It's because it's light. And we ought to be children of light. And we're called to be that. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Someday we're going to give an account for our life. And I really don't think God is going to be that impressed with what we said while we were here, what we said we believed, or how we felt about Him in our heart, or all those wonderful prayers that we were able to say to Him. What's going to mean something to Him is how much we actually loved Him and loved our fellow man. And like I said, there's several of you that do that on a daily basis. And that's a very good example. I appreciate that. God bless you in that. But do it out of gratitude. Gratitude. Our love for others ought to be out of gratitude that God reached down and pulled us up. You know, sometimes I've been called on to do something for someone and I really didn't want to do it. But I did it because I knew it was what God wanted. And that's good, I guess. That at least that's done. But how much better it would have been to just do it because I wanted to actually reach out and help someone. And but there's a difference in doing something because it's your bounden Christian duty than it is doing something because you have gratitude toward God. You actually are thankful to God that He has called you to be like Him. And being like Him is helping those who can't help you back or that would actually spit in your face even. Because you're being like your Father. And you have an opportunity to be like God. And but if we're helping or doing whatever we're doing out of fear, we've not so learned Christ. We've learned religion. If you're just trying to clear your conscience for some evil deed done or bad thing you've done, and that's why you ask someone to forgive you, what is that but selfishness? The same way is it when you help someone, if it's just so you make it yourself feel that you're being doing what God says to do, and that's why you got to do this, and if you don't, He's going to be mad. There's a higher plane to live on than that. And that, that's bondage. But when you do it because God has done it to you, and you're just being a mirror of Him to the world, and that's when you're blessed and they receive the greatest blessing. But thanks be to God who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your toil is not in vain in the Lord. Another place says God is not going to forget your work and labor of love. He won't forget that. He's faithful. But notice the word here, it's in 1 Corinthians 15:58. Be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. Not always just there, you know, just kind of barely there, just barely can make it. We need to think, and this is sort of another subject, but while I'm on this, we need to think in superlatives. We need to think in high thoughts. We need to think we need to spurn the idea of being mediocre or just so-so. We need to think when it comes to, the world around us is thinking, think big, go for it, get it, do it. And we need to do that too, but apply that to eternal matters, things that really matter, which the world thinks is wasting time and just completely fruitless because they can't see any outcome of it. But when it comes to our work and our business and our duties around the home, it looks very low-key, very mediocre, very humdrum, so-so. And that's okay, because that's not where our goals are. That's not where our effort is. That's not where our... We're not trying to build big businesses. We're not trying to build beautiful houses. We're not trying to build estates and things like that. Our efforts and our energies are to be put in the kingdom of God and laying up treasure in heaven, if you will. My thought was actually setting your affection on things above. That's what I mean. It will lay up treasure in heaven, but that's not the reason for doing it. And our thoughts ought to be always abounding in the work of the Lord. Well, what is the work of the Lord? What did He do? Jesus said, I heal people on Sabbath day because that's what my Father does. When somebody's laying on a sick bed and getting better, do they stop getting better because it's the Sabbath day? No. If they're continually on the mend, even on the Sabbath day. And when Jesus healed the man's hand, it was on the Sabbath day. They said, who gives you the authority to do that? I said, my Father works hitherto, so do I. Jesus did good, so do we. Always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your toil is not in vain in the Lord. It may feel that way sometimes. It may look that way. But it isn't that way. And judgment will reveal it. So, be faithful, brethren. Be faithful, sisters. Keep the fire burning. Encourage each other. And let's be encouraged of the Lord. Let's encourage ourselves. It's what David did in the Old Testament. There he encouraged himself in the Lord. We have everything to win. Any thoughts? Open it up. Right. Right. All right. Well, I guess we'll plan to meet back here at 6 tonight for evening meal and communion. And Lord bless you. Try to stay dry.